Okay, so it is our task today to try to understand Gezeirah d'Rabbah a little bit. And it is a very challenging Gezeirah. We've made reference to it over the past week, but we haven't addressed it head on. We've talked about the world in which it operates, the world of Dinim d'Rabbanan, and the idea that Chazal are given the power to override Dinim min HaTorah, and the scope of that. So we talked about whether it actually rewrites Dinim min HaTorah, does it change the existing halacha, or just instruct us how to behave? How does it relate specifically to Shofar? And all of that was important to give us the context. Now, as we're in the post-Rosh Hashanah week, but we are aiming towards Sukkot, so it's still just as relevant because it impacts how we fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav and Etrog this year, which we will only fulfill in a level midrabanan, because the Chiyuv Min HaTorah, which is only the first day, is again suspended because of the Gezeirah d'Rabbah, this concern, and whether you call it suspended or eliminated, that was a part of what we talked about last week. But now, today, we're going to try to get some understanding in some of the motivations and the functioning of this Gezeirah. So let's try to first throw it all on the table. So you saw some of the sources. You saw that this is a Gezeirah. It comes up in a number of contexts, but we can focus on two. You could see from some of the extra Gemaras that gave the look at that there are some less well-known areas in which it comes up. One more well-known relevance is Purim, but Purim gets involved in the issue of Dinim d'Rabbanan and Divrei Kabbalah, so we won't focus on that so much, but the two that are most well-known and that are relevant to us this year, and we're in between the two of them right now, Shofar and Lulav, so that will be most of our focus, what's going on with those, and also in the context of that, so you'll probably also bring up to me now, that there are areas where you might think it should have been brought up and it's not brought up. So throw it at us. What are some of the questions? What are some of the real challenges in understanding the nature of this Gezeirah, the motivation of this Gezeirah, the functioning of this Gezeirah, whether there are issues you saw in the Rishonim, whether issues that occur to you, what do we need to try to make our way through in understanding this Gezeirah? Zach, what would you start with?
Well, one, it just seems like, at least today, like a little bit of a far-fetched concern.
Okay, so far-fetched concern. So that itself you could break down probably into a whole bunch of different explanations. So why do you consider it far-fetched?
I guess it's hard to say because today we have Erev, so it makes it not practical for us.
Well, it's not so hard to say that. That is an issue that is brought up.
But also for Lulav, like, I feel like people know how to shake a Lulav. Like, it's not that difficult. Are they really going to run out and try to find somebody?
Okay, so let's break down those two parts that you mentioned. Now, you're on the right track, for sure, by saying it's far-fetched. That is very much a question that is dealt with in the Rishonim and later. Right, that the issue b'chlal may have seemed kind of remote, but within that, there's questions upon questions upon questions, because there are details that make it even more remote. So just to try to break down even just the parts you referenced, and then there are many more that could be brought in. So first of all, Erevin. So if you're learning Daf Yomi, so you'll have some extra familiarity with some of these issues. But does Erevin factor in at all? So that question opens up a whole load of questions. First of all, would there have been a basis to think that Chazal should have said, but if you're an Erev, it's different? What do you think about that? Bubble?
I would think that potentially if there's an Erev, it could make things more complicated, actually.
Okay.
Because if there's no Erev, so then you know where your Rosh HaSiachid is, and you know where the Rosh HaSiachid is. If there is an Erev, then, I mean, obviously an Erev is not like a Rosh HaSiachid Mamish, but still, in terms of making sure that we're not over and carrying a place we shouldn't be carrying, it could be complicated. Like, I know in my community, they say very specifically where the Erev ends, because there have been instances where people didn't know, and then the Mamash ended up carrying in a place that didn't have Erev. So it's potentially more complicated.
And in your community, there's a whole history of Machlokas on this issue, as with many communities. So anyone listening to recording is not going to know what community you're referring to. But there's a lot of history behind the controversy with Erev, and that's a concern that you have really on any Shabbos. Will this Erev perhaps lull people into a false sense of security, and then they'll end up carrying in a non-Erev area, which is a part of the background of Erev and controversies, and many other reasons too, but it's a part of the background of Erev and controversies throughout the past several centuries. And again, if anyone's holding in Daf Yomi, so these issues will be a little bit more current. For that reason, a lot of the world has Erev on the mind because of Daf Yomi, thank God, and its influence. But so that is a point well taken, that maybe Erev is a reason to be more machmir and to say it will confuse people worse, but it's not a reason to have a more lax attitude towards this. The Tashfetz points out, as he deals with this in a tshuva, and it opens up issues of lo plug, you know, questions in general. Do we say that Chazal made gezeros across the board and didn't necessarily allow room for distinctions? When did they? When didn't they? There's so many fascinating issues. I don't mean to get overexcited, but there's so many fascinating issues that will be brought up by just about every nuance of the sugya that impact the whole understanding of how Dinim D'Rabbanan function and why they function. But that's a part of the question. Do Chazal make exceptions when a situation, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But Valva's point is well taken, that there's an argument to be made that this could make things harder. And, as the Tashbetz discusses, saying an Erev should help maybe should only make sense if there was an Erev around the whole world. Because if we're concerned that you're going to leave your house, so maybe if we have an Erev, we just have to be concerned you're going to leave the Erev area. Which is what Galba was saying, is a concern too, and maybe it's even more of a concern because the boundaries could be less obvious, especially with contemporary Erevin. So it's not necessarily a slam dunk to say that an Erev removes the issue. Now, the Bir Halacha, if you had a chance to see, I think it was the last thing on the list, and maybe you may not have gotten to it. But the Bir Halacha, the Chafetz Chaim, does raise the issue that there is basis to say, part of the Erevin discussion, that Rishus HaRabim D'Raisa does not exist in our environment as Zman Hazeh. So if that's the case, so then we don't have an Issa D'Raisa of carrying, which is a huge topic in of itself. It's a part of what also impacts the Erevin controversy. But the Bir Halacha raises the question that if we don't have Rishus HaRabim nowadays, so then we should not worry about this. We shouldn't have this gezeira of, not blowing shofar or taking a lulav because the issue isn't relevant on the level of d'oraisa. So just to give you some clue as to where this issue goes off as far as the discussions in the svarim, so that prompts a number of questions. One question is, is that ever a viable path to go down? To say that, well, Chazal made Gzeira, but contemporary circumstances, it's not so applicable anymore, and therefore should the Gzeira fall away? It's a major question. And one arena in which that's discussed a lot is the Tosfos in Beis Yosef that brings up that perspective. Talking about the issue of Gezeira Hashem attacking Klishir, that we're not allowed to play instruments on Shabbos or Yontif because of the concern that you might come to repair the instrument if there's an issue. So what about nowadays most people don't know how to repair their instruments, and if there's a problem, they go to a professional. So they're not likely to just on the spot try to fix something. So should that affect things? And that has a lot of impact for Simchas Torah and singing and dancing on Yontif. So that's one issue that Rishonim brought up, and a prominent discussion was the great Talmud Chacham Rav Ram Chaim Noah, who's most well known for his work on Shiurim. So you sometimes might see in various places that talk about measurements, a Chazon Ish measurement and a Rav Ram Chaim Noah measurement. He's well known for that. He wrote a sefer called Ksos HaShulchan. So in that sefer, Ksos HaShulchan, so he discusses the idea and has become very frequently quoted on this point, the question of the gezeira of medications on Shabbos. That if Chazal told us that we should not take medications on Shabbos in non-dangerous circumstances, and that that is associated with the concern of maybe you will grind medications, and nowadays we don't make our own medications. Rabbi Bleich pointed out one of his articles, has a very sophisticated English, so see if you relate to this point. He says it doesn't seem applicable nowadays because we don't make our own medications. And see if you understand this point. He says even a pharmacist is not an apothecary. What does that mean? You know, it means that if you go to CVS, they're also not grinding the medication. They all received it from the manufacturer and they are dispensing it to you, but they're not grinding the medication either. So we're a couple of steps removed from actual grinding of medication, so maybe a case should be made that this gezeira shouldn't apply nowadays. So that's a major discussion. It was not fully accepted by Poskim. His view is acknowledged and taken seriously, but as a maskana, the idea that the gezeira no longer applies was not endorsed by Poskim or by Rav Avraham Chaimdai himself. And the conclusion he comes to is that there's a case to be made for this, but he would only rely on it with other factors involved, which is a view also later Poskim take. But the conclusion that the gezeira should simply disappear was not accepted. And there's a lot to say about that. It's not our topic today, but I'm mentioning it because we will come back to it. But that's a part of that whole discussion that should different circumstances affect things. So there is a lot of literature about that, about the Bir Halacha's question, that nowadays maybe the gezeira wouldn't seem to be applicable, and should that change anything? And just also as a reference in a sprawling topic, but the whole question then brings up that if we assume that there is only an Issur D'Rabbanan potentially involved in carrying, so would that turn this into a gezeira l'gezeira, a double gezeira? A gezeira, maybe you'll come to carry, which itself is only a gezeira since we don't have Rosh Hashanah Daraisa nowadays. And there's an extensive literature about that, about whether this tramples on the idea of gezeira l'gezeira. Is there any kind of conflict with that idea? So there's a very extensive literature about that question that might emerge from this. So to Zach's first point about how to Erev affect things, it's a good question. You know, maybe in a couple different directions. An Erev is something to consider. And even without Erev, but if we don't have the Yisra Daraisa anywhere, so then maybe that also should affect things. What was the second point you brought up, Zach, that it seems like who's gonna do this? What was the question? What's the...
Yeah, because for lulav, I assume most people know how to shake a lulav.
Okay, so here it's also noteworthy, and I don't know if you have picked up on the nuance. I give you one Rambam to look at, I could give you another Rambam also, but we're just sampling some of the makaros here. But there is a nuanced discussion to be had about that very primary question, which is what are we afraid is going to happen? Right? What is the reality here? Right? So you're going to have some question, and what are you going to want to do? You're going to go to a Bucky with this object in your hand to do what? What do you want the Bucky to do? So the language of the Gemara in Sukkah, as I think Zach was emphasizing, is that you're going to ask him to teach you something. Now, did you notice when the Rambam formulates the issue by shofar, he formulates it differently? And Megillah also, which I don't think I gave you a look at, but at least shofar, did you notice that the Rambam formulates the issue differently in the context of shofar? But he doesn't pose the issue as you will ask somebody to teach you something. But in the context of shofar, he phrases it that maybe you'll go to the Bucky to ask him to blow the shofar for you. Which, there is a fascinating discussion to be had. So again, we're going to do a lot of just identifying subtopics here. God willing, you should return to the subject many times in the course of your life and explore the subtopics. But so the Tashbetz has a tshuva. You may recall, before Rosh Hashanah, we talked about the question of the mitzvah of shofar, whether it's tekiyah or shmi or something in between. So this Rambam is part of a Tashbetz's discussion. So what you can infer from Chazal's concern that you need somebody to blow the shofar for you and that will make you carry it, what does that tell us about what the mitzvah is? So many fascinating things. Again, you have to forgive my excitement about this topic because there's so many fascinating avenues that spring out of this. So Tashbetz has a tshuva addressing that. But in the context of the shofar, in the context of Megillah, the Rambam says that the issue is you're going to go to a person to be motzi. Now, in the context of lulav, where the Gemara that we start with today is coming from, so that doesn't make sense. No one can be motzi in lulav. And the Gemara explicitly has the language of to learn. And Rashi fills in what to learn. To learn the nanurim and the brachos. So what exactly is the path here? So one can speculate. There's a tshuva of the Ksav Sofer in Simen Kuf Dalet Narachayin, where the Ksav Sofer suggests, he says, to start with Shofer and Megillah. So it's pretty unlikely that anyone waited until Rosh Hashanah to realize, wait a minute, I have no idea how to blow this thing. I got to go take a class. I have to go find an expert to teach me how to do it because I have no idea what I'm doing. Now, nowadays, this year, maybe we can relate to a little bit more because we're all in such tizzy trying to populate all the different minyanim that have to be spread out and trying to find staff for each one who's going to daven, who's going to blow a shofar, and at the last minute somebody's in quarantine, whatever, so you could end up with people all of a sudden finding out that it's their responsibility to blow a shofar and they had not much time to prepare, so anything's possible this year. But it seems pretty unlikely in a normal year that somebody's going to wake up Rosh Hashanah morning and say, oh, wait a minute, I got to blow a shofar and I got no clue what I'm doing. So let me go to a bucky to teach me. Or that if Purim was going to be on Shabbos, that, oh, wait a minute, I don't know how to read the Megillah, so let me go find somebody who will teach me how to do it. So, therefore, it's more likely that this individual always needed somebody to blow the shofar or read the Megillah for him, and that's a concern. That's what's going to happen b'shas b'mitzvah, so it's going to happen on Shabbos itself. So, therefore, Chazal were concerned about that, and that's how the Rambam understood it. But lulav would have to be different because lulav doesn't have that issue of shemei ka'ona involved. So therefore, it must be about teaching. But wait a minute, so Zach says, but it seems pretty easy, especially if you know the statement in the Gemara, which just gives us an opportunity to talk for 10 seconds about the nature of the mitzvah of lulav. But lulav is a fascinating case study in mitzvot that have different levels of fulfillment to them. Because on the one hand, the Gemara says that that the mitzvah is very simple. When you pick it up, you're yotze. That's it. So that is the whole story. As long as it's a good lulav and esrog, so then picking it up, you're yotze. That's why we have to do somersaults, literally turn ourselves upside down in order to figure out what to do about the bracha beforehand. That'll be a sugya later on in the first parak of Psachim, how to deal with bracha over lasi asman. When it comes to lulav and esrog, because the mitzvah itself does not require very much. But at the same time, we know that there is more to it, that we want to shake it a certain way, and there are details, and those details are important enough to us that the Mishnah says that when you want to know if a child is old enough to learn about the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, so we say, katan hayodeya l'naneya, and that the katan who can understand what it means to shake the lulav, that's the age that chinuch becomes obligatory. So we look for a more perfect fulfillment of the mitzvah, even though on a basic level it is fulfilled just by picking it up. Okay, so maybe there is something that will come up that you're going to go to have to ask a bucky to teach that. Or also, you know, the more common shilohs, I can tell you, that come up nowadays, is there might have developed some kind of a disqualification in the lulav and esrog day. You pick up your lulav sukkahs morning, or you pick up your esrog sukkahs morning, and something doesn't look right. And you want to know, can you make a bracha on this? Is this valid or not? So you go over to the rabbi to ask the question. So if the rabbi lives in a different rishus, so then, you know, that's kind of conceivable. That's a whole discussion, what exactly the concern is, because, yeah, you're right, so for those reasons, it does seem that there are aspects that are far-fetched, and that we need to explain a little bit. What else could you ask about this gezeira? Right, what other questions, whether subsets of the issues already on the table or completely new issues? What else is surprising? If you saw the Rishonim, if you have just thoughts on your own, there are issues abound. And so what else is unusual about the way the Gezeirah is formulated, about the Gezeirah itself? Well, yeah, Ari?
A couple things I thought the Rishonim were talking about. One is the selectivity in different practices where we seem to be concerned about carrying on Shabbos, but in other places not concerned.
Okay. So give me some examples where you think we should be more concerned than we're not.
Perhaps Bris Mila. It seems to be
okay.
The same thing.
Okay, so Bris Mila was an issue that bothered a ton of Rishonim. Right? Tosis and Rishonim all over these sugis are bothered by this issue. That why don't we have a Gezeirah by Mila? So there are many, many answers that are suggested. Among them is the idea, just to maybe mention three answers. So one answer we alluded to last week when defining Aseh and Los Aseh, right, that maybe Mila, even though it's a mitzvah Aseh, should be categorized in the Los Aseh team because there's an Onish. And if it's about Chumrah, and Mila has Karis associated, so maybe that's a reason to treat Mila with more Chumrah. Or maybe there are other Chumras. For example, some of the Rishonim bring up just that Mila is a big deal. Mila's got Yud Gimel Brisos associated with it. Mila is so fundamental. We're not going to mess with it. There are other suggestions. Among them, the idea that Mila is not something that is addressed to all the Klal Yisrael at one time. And Mila in practice, even though this is its own history, but Mila is generally done by professionals once in a while. So to have one person who's doing a Mila this Shabbos, we don't necessarily have to worry that he's going to come to carry. But when you have a mitzvah that the whole world is involved in, and out of all the millions of Jews who have to worry about taking the lulav this Shabbos, so the chances that one of them is going to make a mistake, maybe that, or a few of them are going to make a mistake, maybe that's a bigger issue. But you also have, and I think somebody alluded to this before, that there is a Taz. And there's a lot to say about this Taz. One more topic there's a lot to say about. But so the Taz has a comment in at least three places in its commentary to Shulchan Aruch. And the Taz is so often quoted that Rav David Cohn has an essay about this, and then he developed it into a whole sefer. He refers to it as Hataz HaYadua, the famous Taz. And then he wrote the sefer called Hataz HaYadua, the famous Taz. So what's the famous Taz? That the Taz has this principle, which you could find in Rishonim also as a whole discussion, that even though Chazal have the authority to override the Torah in practice and to prohibit things that are included in Torah commandments, they can't directly contradict the words of the Torah. So if the Torah is explicit about something, so then they don't come in and contradict it. And there's a lot to say about explaining that. I'm happy to expand on that topic at a different time. This is its own fascinating world. But that's the basic idea. So when it comes to, just explain why this should make a difference, because when it comes to shofar and etilas lulav, the Torah doesn't say specifically, make sure to blow shofar on Shabbos. Make sure to take a lulav on Shabbos. It says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and it doesn't make a distinction what day of the week it is. So when Chazal say, well, hold on, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, yes, but not on Shabbos, they're not contradicting any explicit thing in the Torah. They're just contradicting what we can infer from the fact that any Rosh Hashanah we should be blowing shofar, and any Sukkot we should be taking the lulav. So we understand that that's meant to include every day of the week, and therefore there is some level of tension when Chazal say don't do it, but they're not contradicting the words of the Torah. So that they have the authority to do. But if the Torah were to be explicit about this, so about anything, so then Chazal wouldn't have the authority to come in and say, no, don't do that. And he makes this point in various contexts. So he has this in one place in Choshen Mishpat, and in one place in Yerideya, and in one place in Arachayim. So in Arachayim, he's actually talking about this issue and about where Gezeirah the Rabbah applies to. And so when it comes to shofar and lulav, so you're not contradicting the Torah. When it comes to milah, the Torah does, through drashos, have to convey to us, b'yayim hashmini chaval te'afilu b'shabbos. Right? Why does it need to be spelled out? Because milah would be chilul shabbos. Shofar and lulav would not be chilul shabbos to begin with. Tearing a lulav, the Gemara says, netila ba'alma, shofar is chachma ve'ena malacha. So there's no actual Chilul Shabbos involved in those actions. So there's no need for the Torah to say, by the way, understand that this is officially on Shabbos also, but it's true all the time. But when it comes to Mila, ironically, because it's a more of a contradiction to Shabbos, because it is a Malacha, so therefore the Torah tells us explicitly, Afilu B'Shabbos, explicitly through the Drasha of Yom HaShmini, and therefore Chazal can't come and contradict that. Chazal can't come and say that, no, not on Shabbos. So those are a few of the answers. It's a question all the Rishonim are concerned with, a question that comes up a lot, but those are a few of the answers, special chumra of Bris Mila, either because of its concept or because of the Kares, or because it would involve contradicting the Torah completely, or because it would be less necessary because only individuals are doing it at scattered times. A number of reasons why Chazal didn't make this Gezeira, but they also bring it up in other contexts as well. They also ask, why is it that Kriyas HaTorah takes place on Shabbos, so don't we worry about taking a Torah out? Why is it that we have Mitzvah Masah? Is that not an object-based Mitzvah that may lead us to carry, although based on some of what we've seen, the concern with Shofar and Megillah, maybe you could make a case that's not really a comparison to Matzah, but these are issues that the Rishonim do indeed take up. Why here and not there? And it is a part of the complexity of the issue. What else could possibly bother us about this topic? So what about the way it's phrased in the Gemara? Rishonim are very concerned about that also, even though it's just maybe a language issue, but or maybe it's more. But Zach said it's far-fetched. So what is it that we're worried about that's far-fetched? So, okay, we're worried that you're motivated maybe for a lesson or for somebody being motivated to you, but what Aveira are you going to do in the process? So what is the concern? Yeah, Ari? Okay, so the Gemara invokes that. Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos Rishus Sarabim. Maybe you'll come to carry this in a public place. So the Rishonim are bothered by that phrasing. Why? Yeah?
Rashi and Tosafot both pick up on the fact that it didn't say just carrying from Shit to Yachid for Shit to Rabban.
Right. So if you're holding in the issue of carrying on Shabbos, again, it's not Yomi. So there are two forms. There's what we call Hotzah, taking something out of Rishus HaYachid into Rishus HaRabban. And there is Havaras Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabban. You're ready outside. And to move a great enough distance, Dalet Amos outside, when carrying something is also prohibited. So between the two forms, what's more likely in this situation? Yeah, Valvo?
Carrying from Rishus Yachid to
Rishus Rabban. Yeah, I would think so, right. More likely you're in your house and you have some question, or you're in a shul and you have some question and you'll run outside. And you will ask somebody what to do. So if I have to figure out, however far-fetched this is or isn't, between the different types of carrying, what's the more likely concern? The more likely concern would seem to be that I'm going to go from inside to outside. So why did Chazal use the phrasing of maybe you'll carry it outside too great of a distance? So Rishonim all over asked this question. Tosfos, in pretty much every Masechta that mentions this Gezeira, the Tosfos there raises the question. And the Rambam, if you notice the Rambam, you see that he actually reformulates it. That the Rambam, you don't have the question because the Rambam says either one. The Rambam says maybe you'll take it from inside to outside, or maybe you'll be Maver Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabban. And the Meiri, who often follows the Rambam, the Meiri assumes also that it could apply to either, but that for whatever reason, Chazal abbreviated and they just mentioned Havaris Salad Amos Pesach Rabban. The Meiri says because that's the whole point. You're going to bring it to someone and therefore we're focusing on the Havara. But as far as the type of carrying, it could be either inside to outside or carrying outside. But other Rishonim don't take it that way, and they see the concern as specifically about this, that you'll carry it outside. And they explain why it might be. So among the answers is, as it relates to what Belbel said before, that an Erev might be worse than a house, than just being in a house where there's no Erev, because you know when you leave your house, the walls will remind you, you are now leaving your house. When you take a few steps out of Erev, so then you're not going to necessarily have that kind of reminder. And so too, you carry outside a few feet, you're not necessarily going to be reminded that you're making some kind of a transition. So maybe that's more of a concern. You won't have to worry as much that you're going to leave your house, because we're pretty much ingrained. It's pretty familiar to us that leaving our house and carrying something on Shabbos, that could pose an issue. But when you're ready outside, okay, or like the point about the Eruv, okay, that's not necessarily so evident to you. So some suggest that that might be relevant, but it still doesn't help us that much, because to go back to Zach's point, it's even more far-fetched. Right? It's just the likelihood of this coming up, that you're somehow outside with a chauffeur, and you have to figure out what to do with it, and you're going to go then travel with it somewhere. It is a very unlikely concern, it would seem. And what are some other issues? Right, so if you got, maybe you didn't see to the end of the Makaros, you can take a look tomorrow. But what seems to be a big difficulty, so yes, the Bir Halachas pointed about there being no Rishus Sarabin, Bisman Azeh, that's something to consider. But it's not as much a fundamental question, because maybe that is a historical change, and then we just have to figure out how the historical change factors in. But it doesn't call into question the whole concept as much. But the Gemara that starts with this whole issue of not taking the lulav on sukkahs, so that's the beginning of the fourth parak. At the very end of the third parak, so the Gemara has a sukkah of tov dvar mitzvah, that if somebody is involved in a mitzvah, and through his focus on the mitzvah, he comes to make a mistake such as carrying, so whether he is liable for that or not. So, okay, there's what to discuss, what the Maskana is, but it seems like there's a possibility that if somebody would come to carry on Shabbos because of his pursuit of the mitzvah of lulav, he'd be pater anyway. And so this concern seems even more remote, because it would seem like the individual would be in the category of tov dvar mitzvah. So why would that be a reason to worry if we're covered from that perspective also? So it adds, you see the pile of questions that surround this gezeira getting higher and higher. But this requires also a large amount of literature to try to work through. What's the conclusion on the point about tov dvar mitzvah? Does it make a difference if you're not mekayim the mitzvah in the end? Maybe that's what we're concerned. Maybe we're concerned that you fulfill the mitzvah and then you'll carry afterwards. That's where the issue is. You're going to bring it back home. And maybe that's not in the category of tov dvar mitzvah. Maybe even if tov dvar mitzvah is pater, but we still don't want to set up a situation where it's likely to happen. And maybe that's a part of it. So there's a lot of literature addressing this major obstacle to understanding the sugya. Why did Chazal make a gzeira if there is this exception, or possibly this exception of tov dvar mitzvah, which would seem to help you also in such a situation? So a lot of issues to work out. Should just also highlight that the issue of tov dvar mitzvah also adds another element here, because a part of what we find in the literature is the assumption that maybe mitzvahs also make things worse. That there's so many counterintuitive points here that maybe the behilus, the lashon of Chazal, that the concern and the nervousness that you're not going to fulfill a mitzvah properly is what is bringing about the risk, and therefore, how do we manage that? And maybe we're more concerned when a mitzvah is involved than something that doesn't involve a mitzvah. And then what types of mitzvah are in that category? So that also is a tension here. And what do you do with that? I should also just mention, we alluded to this the other day also, that there's some who raise the question, why are we only concerned when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos? We should also be concerned when Rosh Hashanah falls on Rosh Hashanah, because Shabbos only has the carrying issue, Yom Tov doesn't. Okay, so if we're worried about carrying, then we understand why it's only an issue on Shabbos and not on Yom Tov. Although on Yom Tov also there's a whole discussion that Hotzah Shelo Letzarech could also be a problem, and there's literature about that too. But Yom Tov does have the issue that we mentioned before about Shemi Yitake and Klishir. You're not allowed to play musical instruments on Yom Tov. So why didn't Chazal say, don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Rosh Hashanah? Don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah no matter what day it is. So we mentioned this last week a little bit, that one approach is that that would completely wipe out the mitzvah, and both for the Taz reasons of being against Pesukim, but also just for more fundamental reasons of an actual mitzvah of the Tayag. You can't imagine that Chazal would just uproot that completely. And to say that there's a mitzvah of shofar in Rosh Hashanah, but we never fulfill it, that doesn't seem workable. But there is an interesting approach to the Stipler, which I'm going to mention also just for synergy value on top of other things, but he compares it to Bedikas Chametz, that we'll see, God willing, later in the first parak, that the Gemara has a phrase which is quoted in a lot of different contexts, because it's relevant also to understanding how Chazal operated, that the Gemara discusses the possibility of a chi of Bedikas Chametz on Pesach. And the Gemara raises the question, it seems like a bad idea, because for Pesach, fine, you'll search the Chametz, then you will get rid of it. But on Pesach, it's a huge issur to eat the Chametz. So to say, go looking for something that if you find it, is going to be a big mishal. So maybe that's a bad idea. So the Gemara responds to that, no, you're on a search and destroy mission, so that will remind you not to eat it. The hagufa, the nature of the mission, is to find chametz to destroy it, so that itself protects against the risk that you're going to come to eat it. So the Stipler suggests that that helps here also, because what are we concerned about on Shabbos? So if you're going to blow shofar, you're going to take a lulav, so maybe you'll be focused on the mitzvah of lulav, and you want to fulfill that mitzvah, you'll forget that it's Shabbos. So you have to be reminded of Shabbos, so to don't do this mitzvah so you won't forget that it's Shabbos and come to care. But what should we worry about on Rosh Hashanah? So on Rosh Hashanah, you're going to blow the shofar, and you're going to want to fix it. And you're going to forget that it's Rosh Hashanah? How could you forget that it's Rosh Hashanah? You're blowing shofar. That's the whole thing. The whole point is that you're involved in trying to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. So that will constantly remind you that it's Yom Tov, that it's Rosh Hashanah, and you can't fix the shofar. But you theoretically could forget about Shabbos because you're involved in the mitzvah of shofar and lulav. So that could lead you to focus on that at the expense of something else, and then you might come to carry on Shabbos. Okay, fine. But clearly we have a lot of issues here. So let's try to suggest some kind of path and understanding what is going on. And just to recap what's bothering us, right? So we have, first of all, we have big mitzvos that we're giving up for a concern, which, all right, we already dealt with the authority of Chazal to do that and the impact of that, but still seems like quite a trade-off for a concern that is very far-fetched, a concern that we don't even understand what we think might happen. If it's going to happen, we don't know how likely it's going to be in that exact form. Why are we talking about Rosh Hashanah rather than going to Rosh Hashanah? Why are we talking about Havar rather than Hotzah? And if that's the case, it seems extremely unlikely. And why is it more of a concern there than by other mitzvahs? Fine. And what about the fact that we don't even have Rosh Hashanah nowadays? Does that make a difference? What about the fact that there is possibly an exemption for Tal B'Dvar Mitzvah? And that should seem to really reduce the level of concern, if not totally wipe it out. All of these issues, each one we mentioned some of the approaches that some of the Svarim have, but certainly they all pile up to create a big difficulty in understanding what were Chazal motivated by, what was going on in this Gezeira. So what I think the approach is that we have to appreciate that Chazal the Chachmason, so they addressed concerns very broadly, and sometimes there was a narrow tool that was used to address that concern. And Lamashal, so let's go back to the issue of medications on Shabbos. So that was part of why I spent time on it a few minutes ago, so you have a little background in it. So I think it's a similar issue, that when it comes to taking medications on Shabbos, so the Gemara says we're concerned about grinding medications, so we say don't take them if it's not a serious situation. And prompts the question, well, nowadays we don't do this, maybe the Gezeira shouldn't apply anymore, and yet you don't find Poskim jumping on that heather. You don't find Poskim ready to endorse wiping away this Gezeira, despite the fact that it seems to have very limited relevance in the contemporary world. So why is all of that the case? I think the reason is, and you can find support for this in various forms, is that yes, the Gemara mentions the issue of grinding medication, but it's an example of a broader concern, that Chazal were afraid that one might think that on Shabbos, if I'm not feeling well, anything goes. Right? I can do whatever I want in order to address my discomfort. And that issue is exacerbated by the fact that it is true that Pikuach Nefesh Docha Shabbos, that if it was a life-threatening issue, then for sure you would be able to be Docha Shabbos. And even other serious issues that are not life-threatening are Docha Meni Dinim Derabanan. So that makes it more likely that somebody might think that, okay, so therefore for my health, anything goes. I can do whatever is necessary. So therefore, Chazal felt that they had to emphasize that no, that's not true. And in fact, to make sure that you have this, that if it's not a serious situation, we don't let you address it at all, even without a malach. So if you understand that when you have minor discomfort, you can't address it through the standard methods at all, now, there are many exceptions, but that there is fundamentally an issur d'rabbanan to deal with it at all, so then you'll understand that certainly I can't do a malacha in order to address it. But it's a bigger issue specifically because there is a heter and a chiyuv of pikuach nefesh when it's a life-threatening situation. So because it's already a valid discussion that there is some trade-off between Shabbos and health, so Chazal had to be afraid that this might go too far and that Shabbos may fall away completely because of any kind of health motivation called a who. And therefore, they made a gezeira to make that point. So if that's the case, it's not really about the grinding medications. So yes, the Gemara mentions that. That's the most likely example. So in the time of the Gemara, okay, this is something to point to that shows that we don't allow you to address these minor discomforts out of a concern of a malacha. And it picked a malacha, but it's not the only malacha that could theoretically come up. But the basic thrust of the Gezeira is that one shouldn't think that the pursuit of comfort in terms of health, using comfort as opposed to life-saving and more extreme situations, that pursuit of a minor relief, let's put it that way, justifies actual malachas or things of that sort. So in order to cut off that path, so Chazal made this, because anyway, you shouldn't address it at all, and certainly not if there is a malacha involved. And this, I can tell you, is a practical consideration, because I get shilohs like this all the time. People come from the assumption that feeling better can allow a wide range of activities. So Chazal were essentially saying that, no, not even does it not override things, but we shouldn't even deal with it all in order not to make that mistake. So they didn't jump on the heter suggested by the contemporary poskim, didn't jump on the heter that Rav Noah was suggesting, because the issue doesn't really fall away by the nature of medication production changing. That was just the example that Chazal focused on that was relevant to their time, but the broader concern is very much relevant to Zman Hazeh, and whether or not that specific example Medication grinding is practical, doesn't really change that balance. So one could say that the same is true by Gezeirah D'Rabba. So is it that Chazal were specifically worried that this specific thing is going to happen, that you're going to take a lulav and carry it in a Rishus HaRabim, Dalai Lama specifically, and not have a Tav Dvar Mitzvah Heter and any of the other factors? Was that exactly what was going on here? Not necessarily. So presumably there's a statement that's being made, that there is a statement about the importance of Shmirah Shabbos, even on top of other very flashy mitzvahs like Shofar and Lulav. And there's a lot to be said about this. Rav Kasher, as well known as the editor of the Torah Shlema, has Chuvas Divrei Menachem. So in his Sefer Divrei Menachem, he has a whole discussion about the history of Gezeirah D'Rabba, which we didn't even get into much of the history, how far back this goes. The Gemara associates it with Rabba, but there's a lot of basis to say that it goes back long before him. It may even go back to Moshe Rabbeinu. I think we mentioned last week that could maybe explain how Zichron Trua could refer to Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, even if this is a Din Rabbanan, maybe it goes all the way, way back to contemporaneous with the Torah. But there's a statement being made here that Shmirah Shabbos is crucial, and Rav Kasher in his Tshuva discusses why maybe at whatever time this Gezeirah was made, there was a particular concern about Shabbos, but Chazal felt the need to greatly emphasize the importance of Shabbos, even when very fundamental positive mitzvot are involved. And that, again, is also something that has a complicated texture to it and may need this Gezeirah even more, because just like we see when it comes to refuah, that we have to balance the issue of pikuach nefesh, delta es hakol, and not going too far with that. So here also, we do find situations where positive mitzvot are given priority, like, for example, Asei Dol Chalosa say, that one could make the argument, well, I know if we say Asei Dol Chalosa say, and there are situations where positive mitzvot are going to be prioritized, so maybe taka, maybe I can be Mechal Shabbos for the pursuit of a mitzvah, and maybe very broadly, and maybe any other kind of religious motivation that I have also is going to allow me to compromise or to dispense with Shabbos. So Chazal felt that that has to be emphasized very strongly, that the circumstances where we say Asei Do Chalosa say are very specific and very nuanced, and one cannot take on this attitude that I can make whatever decision I want to pursue, here we'll broaden it, to pursue religious inspiration at the expense of the fundamental discipline of the system, of which Shmirah Shabbos is a powerful example. And if that's the message, so then maybe we could also explain the unusual kind of concern that seems to be here. So first of all, to focus on carrying b'chlal. And so carrying out of all the malachos we could come up with, so there might be a reason why we would choose carrying as where we're going to stake this flag, where we're going to make this point. And we guess what I'm getting at, why maybe carrying specifically is the malacha we want to put out there is the concern. So if you learn the beginning of Masechet Shabbos, so the first malacha discussed in Masechet Shabbos, first Mishnah in Shabbos, the first parak, talks about carrying, talks about Hotzah. And the Rishonim discuss why, out of all the 39 malachos, why is it that Hotzah is the focus? So some of the Rishonim introduce a term there, that Hotzah malacha gerua. Hotzah is a lousy malacha, so to speak, discriminating against the malacha of Hotzah. So it needs more attention, maybe it needs more attention in the Chumash itself, needs more attention in the Gemara. So what does that mean? Rishonim have different interpretations of what that means to call Hotzah a inferior malacha on some level. But what runs through many of the Rishonim is just that people don't relate to Hotzah. It's hard to appreciate. It doesn't seem like there's any real change. That the understanding that was articulated in later Sfarim, that Malachas Shabbos is about creating a change in the world, is one that's already hinted at by Rishonim, like the Orzaruah, and others, and is beneath the surface in this discussion, that if you assume that Malachas Shabbos are changing the world in some way, Hotzah doesn't seem to fit the model. Hotzah, what's the big deal? You're just moving a feather from here to there. How does that do any change in the world? So people have a hard time with Hotzah. So therefore, the Gemara quotes Pesukim, even though other Malachas don't have Pesukim, but the Gemara quotes Pesukim to support the Isser of Hotzah. And the Masechta Shabbos starts with it. There's a whole attitude that Hotzah needs more support and attention because people don't fully appreciate why it's a Malacha. So if you think about that, if the whole issue of Gezeirah D'Rabbah is Chazal making a public statement how important Shabbos is, so then perhaps we can understand even more that their method of doing that is to take the Malacha that is least appreciated within Shabbos and say, we're so concerned about this Malacha that you think is the least understandable of the Malachas, the Malacha Grua, and we're going to base everything around this Malacha. We're going to say that even a mighty mitzvah like Shofar and Lulav has to be set aside in order to protect Shabbos as represented by the Malacha that people neglect the most, the Malacha that people have the least appreciation for. Now, with that, we can take it one step further and say, so all the Rishonim ask, okay, fine, carrying, but why Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim and not Chutzah Rishus HaYachal Rishus HaRabim? So here you go one level further. The Rishonim do also discuss in the Masechta Shabbos that we said before, there's a pasuk that is invoked to tell us the issur of carrying. The pasuk is addressing Chutzah Rishus HaYachal Rishus HaRabim. But carrying Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim, so that's less explicit than that, and that's derived from the Rishonim explain Halach L'Moshe Mitzinai from Rishus HaYachal to Rishus HaRabim. So within the Hotzah world, Hotzah from Rishus HaYachet to Rishus HaRabim gets more respect than carrying Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim. So it takes it one step further, that if we're going to try to emphasize how important Shabbos is, we're doing it through the least respected Malacha, and through the part of that Malacha that gets even less attention than the rest of it. So essentially, Chazal took the Malacha that, and the part of the Malacha that seems the least significant to people, and said, out of concern for that, the big mitzvahs of Shofar and Lulav are going to step aside. And that's an incredibly powerful message about the importance of Shabbos, but we also, as we discussed last week, also the importance of everything existing within the framework of discipline. And that we can't say, all right, that our the inspiration that we get from the positive mitzvahs of Shofar, such a glorious mitzvah, that that justifies breaking down the system and doing whatever it takes. But that still has to exist within our context of Shabbos specifically, but also generally the whole notion of respect for the discipline and Yira, all of that has to be the context in which the mitzvahs of say take place. So by making this Gezeira, Chazal emphasized that strongly. And to parallel what we said by medicine, that so, like the Bir Halacha's question, so why don't we change it if there's no Rishus HaRabim? Why didn't the Poskim jump on that? They didn't jump on that the same way they didn't jump on changing the Gezeira about medication, because in both cases, it's not really about the concern that this specifically is going to happen. This is the tool for conveying the broader issue in both cases. And the broader issue is certainly relevant to Zman Hazeh in both cases, and I think that's why the Poskim didn't feel that the example presented in the Gemara necessarily has to be the be-all and end-all of what the concern is. Bevel?
Who's the main proponent of this chief, of this Mahalas?
Of which Mahalas?
Of the whole making a statement idea.
This is really just a combination of different thoughts. The one who touches upon it a little bit in terms of Shabbos specifically, Rav Kasher has a little bit about that in his tshuva.
And then, so I know this also comes up, like when the Ravana Midik is there, that you shouldn't ride a horse in Shabbos because you might rip off a branch from a tree and hit doors.
Yeah.
That's very complex. It's really about the spirit of Shabbat. So how do we know that they have that ability? Meaning we know that they have koach to be ochre things from the Torah, but maybe they only have koach when it's like a legitimate concern for the thing, not when you're just making a general statement.
Well, but maybe that's the as often the case, maybe the question is the answer. Right? That since we do assume that their power was not used without great deliberation, that their paper of power was not used casually, right? So that they only addressed a significant concern, like we see throughout, that they only got involved when the concern was above a certain threshold. So then, the reason the question is the answer, is that the more the actual case doesn't seem to meet that threshold, the more the case that we're dealing with doesn't seem to rise to that level, maybe the more that's an indication that there is something more behind it. So if the concern is broader Shmir Shabbos, then for sure that's within the power of Chazal to support. So the more the example is unlikely, the more possible it might be to say that the example isn't really the issue, but it's reflective of a broader concern. Now, there's all kinds of nuances along the way, because if this was a slam dunk, so then all the questions we've shown him asked about why is it likely wouldn't really matter. They could answer just be, it's not likely, but it's not really the issue. So clearly there's more to figure out, otherwise they wouldn't work on these issues. And also the possibility that the gezeiros don't apply is considered. Right, so Bir Halacha raising it in this context, and Rav Noah bringing it in the context of the medications, and Tosfos bringing it about Shemi Attack and Klishir. So it is a discussion. It's not that this is a blindingly obvious point, but that the broader question of why, at the end of the day, do we not find a full-throated endorsement of that conclusion is a important point to consider. On the medication point specifically, so Rav Asher Weiss has written in the Shuvah, this is discussed with him directly, that on these issues sometimes, it says the more important when you get a question about, let's say, medication on Shabbos, so there's a lot of room to be makel on the details. It may be very makel on the details, but we start from the premise that the Gzera is upheld. And then, question of how to apply the Gzera, then there's a lot more room to be makel, and the mentality seems to be that fits well with what we're saying here, just that we're not that concerned about what's going to happen in this specific case. But we are concerned about the mentality that could come from forgetting about this. So we uphold the mentality that there is something that needs to be asked in every case. But then the answer could often be yes. You know, so when you have the medication, the answer could often be mutter. That doesn't threaten the system as much. But to say that there's nothing to worry about, we're more hesitant to take that approach because the statement is important. The details of the statement could leave a lot of room for kula. There could be a lot to be makel based on that. So just to quickly recap, so we saw that we finally went to the specific topic of Gzeir D'Rabba after discussing its whole context and environment of Chazal's authority and its impact on Dinim D'Oraisa. And when we looked at Gezer D'Rabba, we saw so many questions about why specific these situations, why should it continue to apply Bizman Hazeh if Rishus HaRabim is not such a concern, do we ever make any distinctions, is this a Gezer L'Gezerah, why do we find it by other mitzvos, why are we focusing on Havaris Rishus HaRabim rather than Rishus HaYachet Rishus HaRabim, which if anything, that's more likely, what exactly we're afraid is going to happen, where does Tav Bar Mitzvah fit into this, all of these questions, and in each case we explore a little bit some of the approaches that have come up for each issue by itself. But to take the whole issue as a whole, so we brought up the possibility that it's really a statement by Chazal of the importance of Shmirat Shabbos, and that itself is even a broader statement about not thinking that the pursuit of positive mitzvot allows us to abandon the respect for the overall system and prohibitions, Shabbos prominent among them, but the entire system, and that maybe there's a very similar approach to be taken by other gezeiros such as medication on Shabbos, that even though based on the identified concern of the Gemara of grinding, there seems to be room to be lenient, but poskim haven't jumped on that, at least not as a concept, maybe in details, and again, the practicalities, they are very ready often to be makel, like Rav Chaim Noah says in his Moskana, that there is a room to be mitzarif it with other things, when you have other reasons to be makel. So maybe in both cases, Gzeira the Rava and the Gzeira of medication, there is a similar thing going on, that they are examples of much broader issues. So whether or not the example really continues to pertain, the broader issue certainly does, and that's where there still is a concern. And in the case, maybe more so, with the difference between the two, is in the case of medication, so maybe Chazal picked the most likely situation at that time. And in our time, it's not the most likely, but there are other examples that are relevant. In the case of Xavier the Rabbis, maybe it was never the most likely thing, and that's what other Rishonim try to figure it out. But maybe Adarabba, that was the point, that there was Davka statement being made through the weakest link, so to speak, in Hilchos Shabbos, in the Malachas of Shabbos, the Malacha Gerua, which could have been the weakest link, and the weak part of that Malacha, Chazal specifically made a stand on that point in order to let it reverberate throughout the whole concept of Shabbos. So we're almost finished with our unit about the Dim D'Rabbanan, but we have some major synergy in the Parsha that we will see tomorrow. So we'll try to use tomorrow, our last day of the Zman, to look at that a little bit and to add whatever we can to prepare us for Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So we got a big agenda for tomorrow, so please rest up well so that at 9 o'clock we'll be all ready to address those issues and come as prepared as we can to the rest of the Yom Nerayim and Tishrei. So I wish you a safe and happy and healthy day, and I will see you, God willing, tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.